Okay, my name is Lyle, and I'm an alcoholic. If I'd known this was going to happen, I'd have sat down there. But I'm going to be fairly brief. I was thinking about this this morning. Happy, joyous, and free. And I thought, what an unintended consequence for my entry into Alcoholics Anonymous. I had no idea. That was not on my on my schedule or my plan when I got here. I came to AA because there was no place left to go, and that my life was gone. It had crashed and burned, and it was completely, totally destroyed. And I would not have been able, if anybody had mentioned to me the evening that I went into the treatment center, that if you stay with this, there will be such a thing as happy, joyous, and free. That was not in my zone of consideration, nor could I could not have comprehended that. That was just not possible. And as I've been here a fair amount of time, I watch folks come into AA, sponsees and other people. And one of my first things I tell them is, you can't know what you don't know. And I watch I think, based on my experience, that Alcoholics Anonymous is a universal experience that we're all wired into. And I never watch anybody come in, but what they don't have the same ideas that I had, the same fears, concerns, doubts, questions. What's this going to be like? I'm never going to laugh again. It's just not, I can't without, it's not conceivable that I will ever have a life that I can truly enjoy without alcohol, because alcohol is such an important part of it. It's integral to most of the things that I do, the fun times that I had, except towards the end. So it's just not conceivable that this is going to be anything that's going to be enjoyable. I can kind of get my mind around the idea that one day at a time, maybe I will stay sober. I had bought into that idea early into treatment because my ideas weren't working. I saw that and I was clear about that, so I believed what the counselors and the doctors, and I was hearing from fellow patients, I believed that because they were all members of AA. And so when I looked in their eyes and I listened to them, there was an instant credibility. I knew they weren't trying to sell me something. They were telling me the truth. And I thought it was possible that if I did what they did, I would get what they got, and I might be able to stay sober. But the other part of it, being really happy, wasn't part of the equation. It was not something that I personally could embrace or really think of in any kind of terms of reality. And so as things have evolved here, as they do with all of us, I've looked at this and thought how wrong we all are when we come here and we think this is going to be a veil of tears, and if we stay sober, we have to give all of this stuff up. And that was one of the other things in treatment that scared me. They kept talking about change, change, change. You got to change this. You got to change that. What do you have to change? Everything. And I found myself thinking, you know, I'm going to try to do this, but who am I going to be? Will anybody even know me when I come out? And later I went back and I worked for not quite 2 years in that treatment center with patients. And I thought how ironic it is that every time someone talks to me as a newcomer in terms of change, it has an instant negative connotation. Because change means that I have to lose something. I have to give something up. Not once, not ever did I think that this change that they're asking me to perform is going to have anything in the way of a positive replacement situation. I never once had a positive thought about change. And yet, everything that they asked me to change has resulted in a positive payback. Every single thing. And I thought, how ironic that is. That my brain doesn't work that way. Change means loss. Loss is negative. So all of these things that we talk about, this happy, joyous, and free, were things that I could never have understood early on. And I think that's the great message that we all carry once we get sober and we become a living example for those people behind us who come in with the same fears and doubts that we have. You know, I remember the first Marine Corps squadron reunion I went to after I'd gotten sober. It'd been several years after I'd gotten sober. And I was amazed that among my squadron mates and my comrades, for the 3 days that we were together, I was 100% totally, fully engaged. I was laughing. I was conversive. I was right in their midst. I was having a wonderful time. I just wasn't drinking. And I thought, I could never have imagined that. Because I used to lead the charge at those squadron reunions. And I kind of laughingly thought that their hospitality room bill must have been cut in half when I quit drinking. But this is an amazing program. And I wouldn't give this up for anything. And I think that given some time in this program, in this fellowship, in this process, this 12-step process, I've had plenty of time to make a real education. I'm retired now. So I don't have any legal or career leverage that applies to me as far as staying sober is concerned. It's just that I've been sober long enough that I can weigh this way of life against the one that I had, and I can make a really balanced, educated decision. I wouldn't give this up for anything. It doesn't mean that I'm bulletproof against relapse. I consider that. I keep that in mind always, but I don't want to give this up and go back, and I don't think anybody in the room could be any more happy, joyous, and free than I am. So thanks for letting me be here.
James, alcoholic. Thanks, Lyle. I think of a line in the book when I think about happy, joyous, and free. It's something to the effect of avoid the deliberate manufacture of misery. And I know that a lot of people that I work with, and myself too, because they're a reflection of me, is that I have to be very vigilant of my thought process, because it's very easy for me to grab onto a thought and make myself miserable over it, and it turns out it's not true. So I try to be the gatekeeper of my thoughts and make sure that I'm not believing my own bullshit and thinking thoughts and believing thoughts that aren't true and they're making me unhappy. So for me, I kind of think I'm always only one thought away from being happy. My very next thought can be a happy thought. I think that the peace and surrender we talk a lot about in AA also is a result of having a quiet mind. So if I can keep my mind quiet, I have a really good chance of being happy. And I have these occasional like waves of happiness that come over me, which would be the exact opposite of impending doom that I used to feel. And I know that's a result of being with you and doing the work. And in the 24-hour book, it says something about happiness is a byproduct of love and service. And I don't have to go after it directly. I get it as a result of doing the work and staying in the middle and being available to, you know, be of service to people. The joyous part, I think, has a lot to do with a relationship with the power. I have a connection with a power that I've found through you that is very joyous. And my job is to stay plugged into that power. And I do that, I believe, by being present in my own life. Right here, right now, is where the power is. And if I want to be with the power. I just have to remember that. The free part, I think, is freedom from addiction. What a wonderful, exciting, I don't have the words for it, to be free of alcohol. Alcohol has no power over me now, this moment, because I'm with you. And as long as I stay with you, I believe that will be true for me. And it's freedom from not just alcohol, but from other addictions as well. I remember my excitement on many occasions of being free of nicotine. I never thought that was possible. When I came to you, I thought I would die a smoker, even though I wasn't drinking or doing drugs. But by being with you and working this program, I was able also to be free of nicotine, which to me is very exciting. And I'm sure that's true for a lot of us. How many people are free of nicotine that were not when? Yeah. This is Alcoholics Anonymous, but we're talking about happy, joyous, and free. And that, for me, is part of the happy, joyous, and free. So thanks for letting me share.
My name is Betty, and I'm an alcoholic. I didn't know I was going to have to do this. But I showed up. I almost didn't. I was in the back row, and I had an escape plan. But, you know, one of my maladaptive coping mechanisms has been denial. And I use it freely in sobriety. This isn't really going to happen. This isn't really going to happen until it's, oh, my God, it's happening. But it works for me. Happy, joyous, and free. Before I got here, I thought if you said I was supposed to be happy, joyous, and free, you were asking way too much. You know, my life was kind of a struggle just to get through the day without the guilt and the remorse and the low self-esteem and everything that went with it. And if you would have said, oh, if you do this, you can be happy, I would have said, there is no way. In fact, I was so kind of depressed that I'd figure, why would anybody want to be that? And now that I'm here, one of the things that surprises me the most about how much I love my life is the things that make me happy, joyous, and free are so different than a list I would have made before I got here. One of the biggest gifts that Alcoholics Anonymous has given to me is I have come to enjoy the company of women. When I got here, that wasn't high on my agenda. I've always joked and said, I didn't know why women got together. I kind of thought maybe they were going to sell Tupperware I couldn't really figure out a reason. And I've met a new friend this morning, Michelle from Vancouver Island, and my dear friend Leslie's here. And I was just counting around the room looking at people and going, most of them are from Canada. So I may have been in Vallarta for a while. That makes me happy too. I got to see the birth of my youngest granddaughter. And before I got here, that wouldn't have been too exciting to me. I love my daughter dearly, and I always have, but was I capable of love? Or capable of manifesting my love, or capable of, applying my love freely to somebody else? I don't think so. But I remember I got to be in there, and I'm a procrastinator, so I was finishing up her baby blanket in the delivery room. But my daughter took it and, wrapped it around her right away. She said, Mom, I wanted you to see this. Now, things don't get too much happier than that for me. The gifts that Alcoholics Anonymous has given me are absolute wonders, and thank you for having me here.
Good morning, check test. Hello. Oh. Test 1, 2. Good morning, everyone. My name's Linda, and I am an alcoholic. And I'm really grateful to be up here and part of this. I think that when I think about happy, joyous, and free, as it's been shared, of course, already, but I know that when I was drinking and doing other things, I thought I was happy, right? Because I came from so much trauma and sadness, as I shared last night. But I did notice that when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, I started to feel a little bit better inside. And I wasn't really good with attachment, as some of you have heard my story last night. I mean, coming from where I came from. But I wanted to be like everybody else. I wanted to learn how to hug, which was a big thing when I came here. And I kind of noticed that when people hugged, they seemed happy, right? So for a newcomer, that was really big stuff for me. You know, it's like what's been shared. Like, I didn't know how to be happy without using something or acting out in some way. And I had to tell the truth. And I had to say to my sponsor, I don't know how to do this. I want this, but I'm not sure. Why are these people so good at this? Are they, like, pretending? and slowly, you know, through coming here a lot, you know, I started to feel that experience through God's grace for me. And when I think about joy, I think about, for me, it's the ability to go from a disconnect to a connect, right? And I talked a little bit last night about, you know, being in a 12-step program and, you know, being connected to the community and, of course, respecting what happens in treatment centers, but also, you know, at some point getting the courage to try to get out there in my other part of my community and learn how to be in the same lane as everybody else, right? So I noticed when I got here that people laughed a lot, hey? Like, and I was like, are they laughing at me? Are they laughing at themselves? Like, who the hell are they laughing at? Like, what's happening here? Are these people doing drugs? What's going on, right? And but so healing, right? Like, so healing, you know, because I'd be sitting in a meeting and having a bad day, you know, and not even, you know, just sitting there, not even sharing, like just kind of being, you know, being present to the best I could. And, you know, people start, you know, sharing things and, you know, all of a sudden we're laughing, right? And, you know, leave, you know, go in a meeting feeling pain and leaving a meeting after having some laughter and feeling a bit better, right? Feeling like, wow, I feel a little bit better. I've actually connected a bit. I'm learning how to do this. And so each day got better for me, but I guess it's important for me to, you know, to identify with, it took me a while. It because I didn't have much self-love, that happy, joyous, and free seems to connect with love. And so I think for me, and I can only speak for myself, but it took me a little bit of time, you know, but I found that as I told the truth about it, it got better, right? I started to change, you know, because I could accept where I was at that moment. And, you know, moving forward, of course, my goal in my sobriety one day at a time is to continue to learn how to be happy, joyous, and free, because I am one of those people that, you know, due to 57 pieces of assault in my history out there, I knew it would take me a long time to learn how to accept love. And, you know, and that's going pretty good now. Freedom, as it's been shared up here, of course, by our other folks, that, you know, freedom from addiction, hey, like freedom from addiction. And to me, that is the gold. That is the gold for me. It's that, on my worst day, if I can stay sober and I can stay clean, I'm going to have a shot at this. But without it, the whole game changes. And, you know, I've been taught that I can have those happy thoughts in my brain. And, you know, through my own training and, you know, just through being in the rooms for a while, you know, I've learned that I can have a negative thought or I can have a positive thought. And if I have a negative thought, my brain's going to run with that. Just like if I have a positive thought, my brain's going to run with that. So I continue to learn how to rewire, you know, through the steps and through my spirituality and some other training that, you know, I gotta love that brain today in my life. So I just have lots of gratitude, and I, you know, my attachments have come a long way, and I can hug today, and I can let people in, and, you know, as a result of that, I can experience just a little bit, right, that gift of happy, joyous, and free. But when I come across someone in recovery who doesn't, you know, who shares that that's a struggle for them, I quickly let them know that I get that, you know, that that didn't come easy for me. And it can come easy for other people, and I think that's fantastic, and I learn from those people in the rooms, you know. If I sit beside someone and I feel that love and that unconditional support, I know I'm learning something from them, you know. I mean, I can get this again, but as long as I accept that I have to do it kind of where I'm at, I have to tell the truth to my higher power about that. So that's kind of my little bit of experience of this. And the last thing I want to say about it is risk, okay? Vulnerability, like happy, joyous, and free. When I came here on this trip, my daughter was supposed to join me, and she wasn't able, and I was like, I'm going there alone. I was like, oh, dear, right? Going to Mexico by myself. And, so positive thought, it's going to be so lovely. I'm, you know, just, Linda, be yourself. You know, let God work through you. It's going to be okay. Negative thought, okay, where does the cartel live? Okay, I'm like on the plane going, I'm like, okay, where are they close? What's going on, right? And, surrender the thought, right? Surrender the thought and get back into that other part of my brain that says, this is going to be a great experience for you and you're going to be okay. Right? Anyway, so that's all I have, and thank you very much. Thank you.
My name's Bonnie. I'm an alcoholic. I'm so grateful to be here. Thank you for making the executive decision. Wait, you changed my page.
I mean, she.
Well, first, yeah. Would you guys, we didn't, can we say the prayer together, the serenity prayer? God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. So I didn't know I was coming up here either, and so thank God you brought your book, even though every page is coming out. In this book, you read again and again that faith did for us what we could not do for ourselves. We hope you are convinced now that God can remove whatever self-will has blocked you off from him. I want to welcome anybody who's new or returning, counting days. Are there any newcomers here? Anybody? We're all old-timers again. That's how I get happy, joyous, and free, is finding that connection to God. And so I looked up, and I don't know, I mean, I'm sure everybody's noticed, but do you see there's sunshines up above us?
Yeah.
It's so amazing. Like, that was my spiritual experience sitting up here this morning. I didn't see it last night. Oh. And I'm like, oh, I'm not alone. God's here. Oh, I'm not alone. God's here. Thank you for what you guys said. I got the opportunity to share at a beach meeting this morning, and my path today I shared was, you know, trying to find like a spiritual maturity, spiritual sobriety. That's what gets me happy, joyous, and free. And I was thinking as I was sitting here, my very first meeting, I got sober at a place called the Dry Dock in San Francisco, and shuffled in there, you know, like Lyle said, you know, we're just at our end. And I walked in there, and I didn't want anybody. There was people touching each other, and I'm like, don't touch me. Don't even look at me. But I saw it. You guys gave it to me. You guys gave me God in that very first meeting, and I didn't know it, and I didn't want it. But I saw it. You know, I saw you guys smiling and talking. Had cute outfits on, and some people didn't. Some people, you know, and there was men and women and all different, you know, it's San Francisco. There's a lot of us that shuffled in there. And but I felt it, you know. I saw that happy, joyous, and free in that first meeting. I didn't know it, but I knew enough that I wanted to come back. you know, that little bit. And it's because we tell the truth here. It's because we have steps and we have tools. And 28 years later, I need to keep doing those. Even harder now. Even harder now. More steps, more tools, more calls, more smiles, more hugs, more listening. See God, you know? I'm so grateful to be down here, to be here with you. So grateful that, I don't know, was it 37 years ago that my mom went into treatment, and God, we didn't want to go. Why was she changing everything? But she was the catalyst, you know, and she died at 30 years sober, and she came down here with us. We all got to experience this together, the three of us, and so she's here. She's up here with us. Happy, joyous, and free. You know, it works when I work it. I have to get up and get on my knees, as I shared this morning. I got to do my little program in the morning. I got to keep looking for God. If I can find God in your face, if I can find God in the ceiling fixtures, if I can find God in the beautiful flower arrangements, in Kathy's smile, in my sister's hug. She let me borrow her shirt today. Thank you, Joe, for noticing. I'm so grateful to be here with you guys and know I'm not alone, you know, and that you're with me on this path. No matter, you know, as you shared, stuff happens to us. And I know it will change. You know, that's one of the things. I have this very visual thing in my head of this clock that's like, you know, things are very, very good, and they will change. And I know today, and especially if I'm going to a meeting every day or you know, in contact with somebody or at least have my book and doing my readings every day, I know it will get better. I know that. I want to stay here. I want to feel how it feels right now, which is so, so good, and a life beyond my wildest dreams. As a direct result of this program, these steps, and you guys, so that I continue to be happy, joyous, and free. I'm a junkie, man. I want that good. I want that peace. I want that quiet. I got to work to get it, you know. I got to do my 10th step every night. I just started doing it again about 4 years ago. I was having trouble going to sleep at night, and somebody said something about a 10th step in a meeting, and I'm like, shh. And I became, you know, as for me, I don't know about you, and it was in enough pain that I became willing to try something new. A 10th step at 25 years old. And I tried it, you know, and I have peace when I go to sleep, when I do it. I still don't want to do it, you know. 9 times out of 10, I do it. There's that little rebellious part that I still am quite proud of. That doesn't do it. And I have dreams at night and I wake up and I think the world's going to be ending and, you know, everything that comes with that, because it comes faster now. But if I do it, I have peace. And that's my happy, joyous, and free, that peace, you know. Thank you for giving that to me. Thank you, AA, for giving that to me, to all of us. And thank you for letting me share.
Oh, goodness. I had to talk about Mom. I'm Stacy, and I am an alcoholico, and I'm also an Al-Anon-o. Hi. Oh, my gosh. How can you not be happy, joyous, and free and be here? Oh, well, easy. I guess I came here. Oh, I came here for a spring break, and I remember all the boys got to fight a bull, and I wanted to as well. That went really well. God, I'm so, everything everybody said, I've been having a, you know, the piece of shit that the world revolves around. Every time someone speaks now, I'm like, oh, that's so good, I can't say anything. But people that know me know that, oh, I'll say stuff anyway. I love what's been said so far, and I'm thinking, the thing that's coming to me, and this is what's so good, is like, if you're sober, you got something to share. Like, how the fuck did you do that? And I've been meaning to ask. One time I got invited to speak at this little place, and they sent me this letter, and they're like, and as a part of sobriety, we ask you no cussing. And I was like, oh God, I should cancel. Like, and I've been meaning to ask, can we cuss? But I can't help it. I might. I'll try not to too much. But yeah, the second step about sanity. We came here to be restored to sanity. I didn't come for anything else. When I and I have trouble. I think of myself first. You know, I got sober. It was almost 30 years ago. And she came into that meeting. She forgot the rest of it. She's in there. She's like this. And I had stopped talking to her about sobriety. And eventually she looked up. And I was like, hello. Hello. Welcome. I was in the same meeting at the dry dock, which is great. And then we both start crying. But I came here not to shoot myself in the head. Because the bad people were there. And so somebody told me a long time ago, it's about step one until it's not about step one, and then it's 2 through 12. And I always got to talk about step one, because even though nobody raised their hand, I'm guessing I've met a couple people that have been offered some substances on the beach, and it was kind of like happy, joyous, and free, or, you know, death by 1,000 horses. And only we need to think about it. You know, so, you know, I'm always somewhat new. So step one, you know, it's the craving, and I don't know, the doctors say it takes 21 days or 21 years for some of us, but after that, I'll tell you straight up, I am not fucking staying unless it's fun. I mean, there's that, you know, whatever step that is that says, you know, logic, we like it. We still like it. Yay. But it only takes us so far over the bridge of reason. And then, so I don't know what that is. That's that moment like, yeah, this is nice. I've heard it happens around year 2 and then 7 and 20, but let's not focus on that. But like, you get sober, you're so excited, and then you're at like year 2 and the, you know, and for some reason that's when your spouse leaves. I don't know. Like, hello, this is, you know, I'm myself, but I'm even more awesome now. And that's when it's like that bridge of reason where it's like, what is it, Sarah Palin's bridge. It only goes so far, and then you're like, you can see Russia, but there's nothing there. And that's that miracle thing where God is like, you go back down the bridge and you get a shot of tequila, or that's absolute God, which I say is you people, and I want to be around. They call them the winners. I don't like winner loser, but whoever's having the best day, I'm gonna follow your ass around, because you're the people on the beach, and you're saying, I picture a beach, and you're saying, you're reaching your hand out to me. I'm on the bridge to nowhere with me and Sarah. And I'm thinking of going back, and I got these girls in my room, they will not shut up. And I tell you what, they love their bodies. I've never seen so much nakedness. This morning, they're dancing. It's ridiculous. And they're their hands out. And I'll take that leap. I don't know why, but that's God. Well, then after that, it better be fun over on this, after the bridge of reason business. That's 2 through 12. And what I found is, you know, I get a few years, and I'm like, I'm doing great. And then I'm at year 5, and I'm like, well, how come I kind of want to shoot myself again? Well, for me, I'm so grateful that you brought up. For me, I have all these things I stacked on my family disease of alcoholism, you know? I stacked on first. My mom used to say, oh, honey, take them off in the reverse order you put them on. So, alcoholism. Okay, you get 5 years. Well, why do I want to kill myself? Well, maybe because I ate that birthday sheet cake at that AA meeting and then went and threw it up. That's not very happy, joyous, and free. Well, get your ass to OA. Get your fat ass to OA. No, get your ass to OA. Then I'm in OA, then I stop throwing up, and then, we have my dad. Our dad is a wreck. We love him to death. He's a sober wreck. No, he's not. He's wonderful. But obsession. I think it was year 12. And there's a saying in our town in Seattle. I don't know. Jim probably started it. If you're 5 years sober or something and you haven't come to Al-Anon, you're missing something. But you know what? It's only if you're as crazy as I am. I know happy people that don't go. But for this alcoholic, year 12, I want to shoot myself again. Not quite that bad. But you know, it, and also the bottom raises. So I want to be happier, happier, happier. So anyway, enough of that. But that's, you know, you'd so I'd take them off in the reverse order. And also, so when they say, you know, follow the winners, it's like someone came up to me in an Al-Anon meeting, and sometimes I feel worried that I'm bragging, but I did not get this. I was clinically shy. My mom was going to take me to a psychiatrist, even though she was a drunk, when we were little, because two things. I never cried. I was super shy, and I may or may not have pooped in the bathtub with her. So she was going to take me to a psychiatrist. If you know me now, I do not shut up. I am not shy. And you people did that to me. Like, you gave me this happy, joyous, and free that floweth over. my kids, please, Mom. She goes, in your head, Mom. I'll say something. I'll be like, and she's like, please talk in your head, Mom. But this gal came up to me in Al-Anon. It was like last week or the week before. And we have a big meeting, right? It's like 100 people. It's really great. And she came up after the meeting and she said, are you the one that laughs so loud? And my sponsee said, yes. And she said, you don't think you're having an effect. And she said to me, can I have your number? I want what you have because like I always hear you laugh no matter how big the meeting is or whatever. I said, sure, you know, yeah. But I don't, and then I heard this thing on NPR, and I can talk forever, so I won't, but I heard this thing on NPR the other day that is about yawning and laughing, and you know that science program. You can't make yourself laugh. I mean, try it. You can't. You can't unless you're a good actor or whatever. See? It comes. It's God. It's like, brrr, you can't. And so when my daughter's like, Jesus, you know, stop laughing. You can't. And I'm like, you know. The other one, I was in a movie. It was a dark movie, big theater, and it was the previews, and I was already laughing, apparently. And somebody comes back in the dark. I hear this. And I'm way in the back, and they come, and they're like, Stacy? Stacy? And they come up. They go, Stacy? And I'm like six rows in. I'm like, yes. And it was my sponsor. She goes, I knew you were here. It was Kathleen. And like, hello. So, yeah. Well, I want to stay. And so I got to up my game. It's not because I'm smart. It's not because I'm, you know, and there's a pamphlet, God, Why We Were Chosen. Certainly not because I was smart. You know, why were we chosen? God gave us a miracle. And I always say that's the first step. God gave me a miracle. You know, whether it was a blue light special or all those things we have, but it was a miracle. And you get your ass in the door, you get your arm in the door or something, and then it's 2 through 12. And that's, I want another word instead of the winners, but it's like you see God in someone, you just invite yourself to their casa, you know, even though you're shy. But you know what? What do they say? God, we find heaven by backing out of hell. You know, you get pretty unshy when you want to kill yourself in year 12. So, and then a vision for you is just what I was looking at. That's where all the happy, joyous, and free, like this guy, he succumbed to the gay crowd inside who laughed at their own misfortunes and understood his. You know, when it talks about we're not a glum lot, you know, life among Alcoholics Anonymous, attending gatherings, you know, this is where we find God, and we're in the same wrecked vessel. And it ends with, God will constantly disclose more to you and us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do for others. And it is exactly what I think it was James and Lyle, everybody said it. When I was drinking, I was looking for happy, which was going to come in the form of a man for some reason, which is not at all where I look now, sorry. But, it comes from, and my sponsor says, you get it from the doing. And I don't do the do to get good. I do it and do service because otherwise I get very depressed, and you can get depressed in the rooms, and I like to talk about that. I get very depressed. And that's what took me to, you know, these sister programs, and I don't feel that. So I want to do something weird, which is not new at all, but I've been doing this thing. This is my latest. I have the laugh. And actually, I could be senile, so somebody let me know if things go too far south. But I've been doing this thing, so we got some. Everybody will say something, and I'll be like, oh. And even my little friends, they're like, what's happening with the hip situation? So they said, we're going to call this the hip trip. And this morning, can I do this, Danny? We were saying, like, one of the things, too, is for, is just that, so everybody should stand up. Do a little this action. I don't even know how to dance. Little hip? Little hip? Little booty?
It might seem crazy what I'm about to say.
Okay, come on up here. Come on up here.
Well, we'd like to ask, open the audience, I'm not saying that well. If you have questions or anything you'd like to share at this time, we'd like to open it up to the audience.
Great. I need my exercise. Let's bring this around.
As do I. Thank you. I'm an alcoholic. My name's Julie. I'm grateful to be here alive and sober today. When I first heard Happy, Joyous, and Free, I never thought those three words could go together. So I wrote it down. I thought the person who said it was brilliant. It was at one of my first women's meetings. And then I started hearing it more and more, and I realized that you guys actually meant it, that those three words could go together. And I do that better some days than others, but I really try to live in the freedom. And if I live in the freedom, the happy and the joy are going to follow. So thank you.
Hi, is this on? Yeah, I'm Ed. I'm an alcoholic. Happy, joyous, and free. That means to me, what I heard when I got here was I can't sit here and just get it. I have to take action. So what all those three mean to me is I get those if I take the action. I didn't know what that meant when I got here. I thought, oh my God, what does that mean? Luckily, God put people in my life that I didn't really want to be around. But I had nothing behind me that I could hang on to, so I had to go forward. So I trusted them. And they said, we're going to go here, join us. We're going to go do this, join us. Didn't really want to because I was an isolator. But day after day, week after week, I did those things. And from that action, those things started showing up. And like somebody said earlier, waves of serenity or whatever come by. Not for the whole day, but maybe a snippet. And then it just started building. So I don't have it all the time, even today. But I get those things if I take some action, like sticking my hand out to somebody I don't know. I get that. So thank you for that.
I'm Leslie, and I'm an alcoholic. And thank you so much for sharing, all of you. It was great. So the disease of alcoholism is cunning, baffling, and powerful. And so what my experience is that when I'm not happy, I think I'll never be happy again. And when I'm happy, I think I'll never be depressed again. And that's why I need you guys, because I can't do this alone. And especially, and when I'm happy, I think I don't need you. And when I'm not happy, I think I need to be alone. You know, do you ever spend time alone by yourself, with your own thinking? Your mind I get weaker and weaker and weaker, you know, and I have a disease that it's a disease of isolation. And so I think I need to be alone, but really I need to be with you. So that's all I have. Thanks for letting me share.
Hi, everyone. My name is Russell. I'm an alcoholic. The book says that our sordid past may become our greatest asset. When I sobered up, I was here. I was watching you people that were over here, and I didn't know how to get from there to here on my own. Right out of the gate, there was trust issues for me. I didn't trust anybody in the room. I barely trusted myself, and there was no God coming to my rescue. So my sordid past brought me to there. You people brought me through the work that got me to here. So I just want to say thank you for coming here today and sharing your sordid past with us that remind us that on the other side, when we get through that fear and that work, we are happy, joyous. But best of all, we're free. And thank you for that. It warms my heart to hear people talk about their past last night, and we sit and chuckle about it. The times we spent in Tim Hortons in St. Albert with people and come out of there in pain because our stomachs are so sore from laughing so hard, and we never knew what that was about. Was this a medical issue that my stomach was sore, that I was laughing so hard? Not really. It's something that I just wasn't used to doing. So thank you again for all your support for this roundup. Thanks.
Hi, my name is John. I'm an alcoholic. Thank you all at the front there for your wonderful message that you passed along and a good sense of humor. God damn it, I love that. You know, and people just stand up and do that kind of thing. I think you got to let yourself go if you want to be happy, joyous, and free. When I first come in the program, I was sitting in the Lano Club. It was Christmas, and I was scared skinny. I was reading a book, and I hoped nobody would talk to me and all the rest of that. And the door opened up, and this guy says to me, "What are you doing?" And I said, "I'm reading the book." And he says, "No, you're not. You're going to be Santa Claus." So I said, "I can't be Santa Claus. I had a black beard at that time. It was about this long." So anyway, they said, "No, you're going to be Santa Claus. Come with us." I said, "No," because I didn't have any self-confidence. I thought, "Don't take me out there. Those kids won't like me, you know." So anyway, they took me into the bathroom, and they handed me this suit, and I put the suit on, and then I put this smelly old white beard over the top of it, and then I sat down in the toilet and wouldn't come out of the cubicle. So finally, he says, "Come out." So, or he's going to kick at the door or something like that. But anyway, I went out and I walked in with those kids. Now, happy, joyous, and free doesn't necessarily come from here. It might come from there. I believe that the spirit of man and the spirit in this program, yes, we have the spirit of God and up there, and that's what gives us the open, and AA has given us the ability to see clear. And so every one of you demonstrate the spirit every time I look at you. And your spirit is in the eye. If you don't believe me, look at the people next to you that are in sobriety. And the spirit comes through the eyes, nowhere else. Anyway, here I am, and I come out of the toilet, which I'd been in many times before, but not in the same position. So I come out and I sat down, and this little guy sat in front of me. Now, I'm scared skinny, right? And I'm talking to the kids like, what do you want for Christmas? And they're looking at me like, what's wrong with this old guy? And at that time, I was quite young. So he said, this little guy sat there just glaring at me. And I kept looking at him, and I kept saying, do you want to come up? No. And my whole being just died every time he said no. Finally, he comes over and he says, Santa, can I give you something? And I thought, okay, he's talking to me. And he gave me this little blue rock. He took it out of his pocket. Now, I don't know what you feel at that point, but I know what I felt. And all that up there just come to light. And that's what I found in the AA program, is that as we started to live it, it comes to light. You may not recognize it unless you're willing to realize that you're no longer with a big grin or a dopey look on your face. You've got a grin. And you're starting to feel alive. You start to feel alive. And that little kid gave me his rock, and his mother came over, and she had experienced happy, joyous, and free as well, in that he had given me his pet rock. And she came over and she says, I am amazed. He guards that with his life, and he gave it to you. So that is what AA is about. We guard it with our life, but we're willing to give it to you. In order to keep it, I have to give it to you. And when I see the look on your face, you know, when I get a sponsee or a client or something that I'm talking to them, and I see the light come on. You know, you get the, you know, when I see the person who comes into AA to begin with, they come in like this. And their faces are long, and then the light comes on. Somebody says something and it makes sense. And you can see that light in the eyes. And that's what the spirit of Alcoholics Anonymous is about. So when I talk about the spirit, that's what it is, the spirit within you. And all we have to do is reach in there and help you to live it. So God bless you all, and thank you all for your messages, as I said. And
Hi, my name is Roberta. I'm an alcoholic. And I just want to share a story that I just remembered last night walking back to my apartment that reveals to me my higher power sense of humor concerning happy, joyous, and free. In the 80s, I was in art school, and so it was cool to be new wave and to wear black, be morose, and have angst. And I wasn't that. I wasn't drinking or using at that time, and I was finished with Alateen, and I had progressed into Al-Anon. And so I had some tools, but I've always been like this kind of nice, smiley person, even though inside I was suffering, right? But on the outside, I was always smiley. And so they nicknamed me Sunshine in art school. And that was not a compliment. That was not cool. So one time I went to a party. One of the art students was in a band called Mental Anus. And they had, so you paid your, you know, your cover charge, and they were giving these pins. And I did not know this. Didn't occur to me till right now, sitting in this chair, that this little sack of pins was our triangle, right? And so they must have attained this sack of pins, and so that, like, you knew you paid your cover if you had this triangle. There was a big sack of pins, and one of the buttons was happy, joyous, and free, and the guy just randomly reached in there and grabbed out this pin and gave it to me. And well, they were all like, oh yeah, that's so you, Sunshine, right? And I'm at the and I just think it's so funny, because I didn't know it was an AA thing. I did not know that, even though I was in Al-Anon. And I just, like I say, it's my higher power sense of humor, because now I'm here today and I'm like, oh wow, that was like meant to be somehow. That was like some sort of sign, because, you know, eventually I left Al-Anon and progressed, moved on into my alcoholism and became a career drinker for about 15 years. So, and today, you know, I believe that button belongs to me. I wish I still had it, you know, but I still do in my memory, and I'm grateful to be here. Thank you.
Hi, everyone. My name's Rhonda. I'm a grateful recovered alcoholic. And like this lady over here, you made me remember my first few meetings. Somebody quoted the big book and said, "We're sure God wants us to be happy, joyous, and free." And I was like, oh, I love those words. And I pulled out a piece of paper. I wrote happy, joyous. And I vividly remember leaning over to the other person. What's that third word? And they were like, free. And I put free. And I kept that in my wallet for almost my whole first year of sobriety because that was what I wanted to be. And, you know, this is a spiritual program of action where we're seeking a spiritual experience or spiritual awakening as a result of doing these steps. And this spiritual awakening or spiritual experience is to become that. And that's what it kind of, it hit me. But really early on in the big book, I related to the doctor's opinion that said we're restless, irritable, and discontented. Unless we can experience a sense of ease and comfort, which is the cousin of happy, joyous, and free, that comes at once with taking a few drinks. And so, you know, after I had studied the big book, it kind of all fell to place that, you know, just like a computer when you open it up and it's already got default settings in there. It's already set up to have this program in and this font in this program. I mean, everything's already kind of default set it up for you. And unless you go in there or somebody goes in there to change those settings, that's how they're going to stay. And when I came to AA, my default setting was restless, irritable, and discontent. I would wake up in the morning and nothing would have happened, and I'd be like, oh, I got to get through another day. What am I going to do to try to make myself something other than this feeling? And my way of doing that was grabbing a drink. I was trying to force those kind of feelings on me. And they worked like this temporarily. They were fake, but they worked temporarily to make me feel a little bit happy, a little joyous, a little free when I was drinking and doing whatever. But it actually made it worse in the long run. And the only way to get that true spiritual transition to now I wake up and I'm like, ah, oh, I've got another day. You know, it's not like I walk around saying, hey, I'm happy, joyous, and free. You know, I mean, I'm not like all zany, but my default setting now is to have that peace in my heart and to have that happiness. And that's what I'm truly grateful for. And I'm grateful for the steps and I'm grateful for events like this. Thank you, everybody, for being here.
Hello. Hi. I'm Sylvia and I'm an Al-Anon. And I heard this happy, joyous, and free to one of my companions or peers in a meeting. And I thought, what is she talking about? what is that? I mean, that is not in the program. And another one in the group said, yes, that's step 9 or step 10. And I thought I knew it all. And I thought, oh, no, that's I've worked the steps, but I never heard about that happy, joyous, and free. And and yes, now today I felt a lot of pain, physical pain. But now I feel really happy, happy and free from that pain. And the only thing I can do is work on me or work on my part and to find out what is my part. And I can't ask the other, oh, please jog and, you know, do this and do that and do the other thing. I can work only for me and start with me. So let it begin with me. I'm number one on the list. Thank you.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you very much for sharing. Happy, joyous, and free. The happy and the joyous, I always thought I was going to find in the bottle and the drug and everything, all the addictions, okay? And it wasn't lasting. And I would repeat it over and over again, expecting different results. And the happy and the joyous, but then the freedom of bondage of self. And the fact that I'll never know it all. And the fact that if I keep pruning that tree and pruning that tree, it's going to keep growing from God and from you all, you know, learning and just being, I'm not happy, happy, happy all the time, you know, but I'm so much more happier than I used to be. And I'm so grateful that it's progress, not perfection. And that dance, I was so hoping you were going to play that song. Because we danced it in Florida before we came here. And I love it. I love God. I love AA. and it's just an awesome life, and I don't know what's going to be around the next corner, and I don't want to know, because God's got it all laid out, and I'm willing to go through the tears and the struggles and some pain to get where he wants me to be so I can be there for the next person that comes in, because that's the way it was for me. Thank you very much.
Morning, everybody, and it's just a blessing to be here. My name is Richard, and I'm an alcoholic from Vancouver. And I came down here in 2009 after moving from Eastern Canada back home to Vancouver. And a lot of stuff happened, and I had to go back to work and all this kind of stuff. So at work, they said, well, there's a convention down in Puerto Vallarta, and so I went with the medical convention. Then when I got back, I've been in AA for 8 years, and I was going to this 7 a.m. group, and I looked at one of the guys, Bob, and I said, Bob, I don't want to drink, and I'm just not happy. And he said, well, what's the problem? And I said, if I knew it, I wouldn't be asking you. Yeah. And he says, have you ever gone to Al-Anon? And I went to him, I said, well, the old timers back in London, Ontario, just said, all they want to do is just, condemn us and all this kind of stuff. And I said, well, I'm willing to do anything, because I wasn't happy at home. I wasn't happy at work. And I was happy, joyous, and free when I was drinking. I just didn't know that I was, messing up my life and everybody else's. And so this was a real, I went to the Al-Anon, and I'm sitting there, and it's Bob, myself, and 15 other women. And I'm thinking, oh, well, this should be good. And so they say, who are you newcomers and all that? And I said, I'm Richard and I'm an alcoholic. And they said, we know that. And I went, well, how do you know that? He says, well, I'm the only guy here. When Bob always comes here. And I went for about 2 months, and I found out what boundaries were, and I found out that if I ask questions, I get answers. And I looked at the books and all that kind of stuff, and then I got happy, joyous, and free, and I got talking to my family, and I got talking to work. And that was 2008. And in 2009, one of the guys at the Alano Club said, let's go down to sobriety under the sun. And I'll tell you, that was 2009, and it's been a few years since I've been down here, but you guys have made my life unbelievable spiritual again. And it's so nice to hear that it's here. The spiritual part of my world is here, with you guys. And I tried to make it out those doors from the meetings and that, and I can do that now. And I'm living down in Vancouver, and I'm two blocks off of Hastings Streets, and it's, they're dying there. And I can still walk down there, and I don't condemn them. I'm not really into, reviving them anymore and giving them the life pack that the EMS guys are giving them. But I don't condemn them anymore. It's a disease, and I have that disease. And they just don't know what to do with it. And I went to a 47th anniversary of the Dugout Club, right in the war zone, they call it. And it was inspiring. And I was with a really good friend of mine who is 90 years old and has 47 years of sobriety. And her name is Glady M. And she just, when she found out I was coming down here last Tuesday, she just ripped me right apart. And she said, and you didn't even tell me you were going to Mexico. You know I love Mexico. But anyways, it's a pleasure to be here, and you guys have just been a big part of my life. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Hello, I'm Michael, double winner. So it qualifies me for not going, knowing which way I'm going all the time. But I want to thank the panel, and I want to say when I came in, I had the same experience. When people were laughing, because of my Al-Anon side and experiencing all the pain and verbal abuse and everything, and alcoholics, I was truly offended. I was like, what are they laughing at? This is horrible what that person did. Look what they did to their family. Look what they did to this person. It really was hard for me initially. And, so I go to both meetings, and I couldn't figure out which one was which, what was going on. But I also had this experience. It took a few years, but I stopped looking behind me what's the next bad thing was going to happen. I didn't even realize that I was totally in fear and hypervigilance from being in an alcoholic home, totally mistrusting, totally fearful. until it started to evaporate. And then I had this feeling like I'm standing nude on the beach or something. Like, I'm not fearful. So how do I define myself if there's no longer the fear? So what slowly happened is I started looking forward to the next positive thing instead of counting negatives. Because the way I grew up, somehow I got in my brain that if there was one bad thing that would happen, there would be three. And I would wait for the next one and then the next one, okay? And they all came together. Of course, I was making that happen, probably. So it took a while for that to dissolve, the fear, and to say, you know, guess what? You get to create the next positive thing. And misery is optional. That was the biggest saving thing. And I'm responsible for my own personal happiness. I was a victim, a total, you know, I'm like 60% Al-Anon, 40% AA. And so figured that's about right. And I didn't really realize how fearful, how afraid I was to change anything. And so if you ask my six children, you know, they would say, my son happened to show up at one of my AA meetings over in Chapala when he was down visiting. And I said, you can come to my breakfast meeting if you want, or you can go eat in the other room with your family, you know. He came in, and he's had this perspective since age 10, he's 35, of watching me go through the program. And he did a little critique and said to all of our members, you know, what he got out, how he admired AA and the process that I was in, and then critiqued sort of me a little bit and said, this is what my dad's been able to do over the years. And I was like, my heart was like, wow, this is exactly the gift of the program. And I wouldn't have been there for this kid who started to use when he was 15 after I was 5 years in the program and was actually caught. I was telling this story to Linda. He was caught on the lawn after the seniors left the party and he was drunk in his underwear, like, you know, on the lawn of this house, and the police got him, no one else. And here's the gift of the program. I sort of instantly knew that this was a good thing because I was able to go to the judge with him, stand there. I knew the judge. It's embarrassing. And then the judge gave him sort of this thing. He had to go to these 12 sessions with this AA, you know, the best guy in AA in the whole area, who was my friend, who was really close to me and was really a wonderful person. Couldn't ask for anyone better to be sentenced to this guy in a group. And then he had to pay his own money out of his own bank account. And if I wasn't sober, how could I have spoke to him and disciplined him at that point? So it shifted it. And this is the guy that runs my business all over the U.S. now and has three kids. And it's just really heartening to see that, you know, that's the thing. And my kids will say to me, Dad, you know, you'll do anything to stay, you know, sober, to help yourself. And so that's been the presence I've been able to bring to them through this. I'm still not the person who hugs everyone. I'm not the person. I mean, I still have a lot of the problem with that. But I'm great to be here, and thank you.
Thank you. My name is Kelly. I'm an alcoholic. And I want to thank you for the share. Lyle especially. I remember how dark my life was before I came to AA 5 years ago. I realized that I have to do all the work to keep this beautiful place, what's it called? I'm trying to think. The line is, look no further for utopia. This is utopia for us, right? I was filled with hatred and victimization. I felt I had that victim mentality, and I want to thank you for being free from that. And I want to have utopia close to me. I used to become isolated. I had no friends. Now I have all of you. I love you guys. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Andy, and I am a nervous Al-Anoner. But I thought I had to try this. Because I came to a Q&A meeting this morning, and Catherine O'Hara turned it into a dance recital, so it was all bets are off. So Basically, I learned how to take all the craziness in my life and turn it into logic. Everything would make sense. And that worked until I ran into the alcoholic brain, and it just went to shit in a minute. I was sitting in a speaker's meeting, an AA speaker's meeting, and I noticed that the sound system wasn't working, but every alcoholic still spoke into the mic like it worked, even though they knew it didn't. So I asked one of them, I said, "You realize that the PA system isn't working?" He said, "Yeah." I said, "Well, why the hell are you talking into it? I thought it might work for me." And, you know, using logic to, and I thought to myself, I am fucked here. This is not going to work. So I learned that I had to feel, and that sucked because it was really inconvenient. After, you know, having been able to intellectualize all emotion for the feeling thing is really inconvenient. But I finally, what I learned from AA friends was the three idiot rule. And that is, so, you know, the first one was I couldn't stand the guy I was working for, but he was an idiot, you know, so. And then the second time, I got another job. I didn't like him either, but he was an idiot. And the third time, I thought, maybe it's me. I got my ass in Al-Anon almost a year ago, and I am very grateful.
Hi, everybody. I'm Gail. I'm actually a three-hatter. My primary addiction is food, and after being in OA for 3 years, I realized I qualified for AA, and then 7 years ago, when I was at this conference, I realized that probably 30 years before that, I should have been in Al-Anon. So, and I thought, oh my God, have I got another hat? You know, and I can't say that I've worked all three programs perfectly all those years, but I do know that my life is so much better for having been here and been around you guys and learning from you. It's just been an amazing trip. And I want to thank the panel so much, especially the reminder about how I felt about women, because like 24 years ago when I started going into 12-step rooms, I was one of those people, I didn't trust women at all. And now, I mean, we have the most amazing women's meeting here in our Orlando club. We're Serenity Sisters. And it is just, you know, that's our home. I mean, the core of me, that's my home meeting. I just love it. And the happy, joyous, and free thing. I always picture Snoopy dancing around, you know, with the ears up in the air. We used to have a beagle, and every time I looked at him, I thought of happy, joyous, and free. So I want to thank you for that dance. That was just amazing. Really, really great. And thanks, everybody, for being here.
I'm Hank. I'm an alcoholic, an addict, and grateful member of Al-Anon. Thanks very much to the panel. I have a question for the panel. In conjunction with the title of the panel, Speaker and Spouses, I'd like to ask you how you do happy, joyous, and free in your marriage or in your primary relationship.
Aren't we at time?
No.
James, alcoholic. I work on my with my program, and Betty works on hers, and we just enjoy our relationship.
My name is Lyle, and I'm an alcoholic. I was at a conference one time years ago in Olympia, Washington, and they had a panel. And they had an ask it basket, which I had never seen before, where the audience puts in questions and then they pull them out and they address them to some panel member. And I got a question they addressed to me and said, "How long after you got sober did you see an improvement in your sex life?" And my wife was sitting on the front row. I said, "I noticed it right away because I was no longer alone. I thought Barbara was going to climb under the chair. That's all I've got.
Oh, my God. The first thing that comes to mind, where did you go? Oh, okay, thank you. The first thing that comes to mind is my Al-Anon sponsor. I don't want to say fixed, but, you know, I come, my husband, he needs Al-Anon, but he won't go. Am I not an addict? If he went, you know. She just blamed me all the time. Is this taped? You know, she'd say, let it begin with you, Stacy. And she'd say it all the time. And then, I did not know the traditions and all that. I did, you know, and you grow up in an alcoholic home, and also if you're an alcoholic, it's kind of this tricky thing. It's all about me, you know, and I, you know, so I picked this amazing guy. He picked me, and he picked me because I was exciting. And turns out that's not like the long-term plan. He kind of wants me to calm down. But I didn't know it was just me. Like, we were married. We have, you know, our kid or whatever, and we're going to buy a car. And I was so pissed. I want a convertible bug, of course, because I grew up with them. That's what we do. And he's like, we have two kids. And I'm like, so what? You know, they're going to grow. Whatever, you know, and I want it to be red or whatever. And my sponsor's like, Unity. What, you know, and that she made up this saying. Well, it just became a saying because pretty much all she would say, my husband's name is Dennis. What does Dennis think? And I swear to God, it's like when you call and you have a problem, they say, did you pray about it? And you're like, should I lie? Her thing was, what does Dennis say? And I would, I mean, I just said Dennis who. I mean, let's be honest. I just say Dennis who. And so I was in a meeting one time, and a friend of hers said something like, yeah, my friend has this thing, and I don't know. It's like, what would Dennis say? And I was like, oh, my God. It's like a saying. And I have to think to myself, because I'm sick, I still have to think. Well, first I think, how do I get this by him? But then I think, you know, this whole Unity thing. So, I mean, she has saved my marriage. And when I have Let It Begin with me, like, you know, an argument or something, and I'm like, oh, fuck it, I'll try it. And I maybe give him a hug when I actually want to kick him in the shin. And then the whole day turns around, and he, like, is, you know, bought me a scone or something wonderful. And I didn't know that was coming, but in the past, I'd be still stuck on it's you. And so, yeah. She does it. If you get a sponsor in Al-Anon, you know, I'll tell you what, it's going to be your fault. And it's gonna, they're going to be right, probably, too. So that's it. I have her number if you want.
I think I need to call her. I'll just say quickly, the thing that came to my mind is that we pray together. He's 25 years sober, and he has a sponsor, I have a sponsor, and we each go to our meetings, and he works with newcomers, and I have sponsees, and, you know, we just keep trudging the road, right? But we pray together every night and in the morning and at meals, and we have this common language that you've given us, and just try and keep telling the truth. And so thanks for that question.
Just want to add, I'm a divorced woman, but I've been divorced for about 14 years, and I did meet my husband in recovery, and we shared lots of great stuff, and we've raised our children together. And I guess one of the things for me is, as a result of working the 12 steps, I knew that it was important in my heart, and also as he had shared with me, it was important in his heart that we treat each other with respect and dignity. And so that's kind of cool, you know, when you, when I met someone and, you know, we have, you know, quite a bit of time between the two of us. And one of the defining moments is we were in the middle of our divorce, and I went by the river and prayed, and
you know, I had people, some people saying, you know, you want to take this person to court and, you know, you want to, you know, get his money and, you know, I mean, you know, he's an oil man kind of thing. And so I prayed and I'm like, no, I'm not going to court. And so we, you know, we were able to work things out as a result of the tools in recovery, you know, from obviously Alcoholics Anonymous and Al-Anon, right? And what was really neat about it is kind of that step 3 and 11, you know, kind of let go, you know, and turn it over and just focus on my part. And what was interesting is when I went through the settlement with my ex-husband, he said to me, you can have whatever you want. You can have whatever you need from me. And I said, wow, why? And he said, because you've always treated me with absolute respect and love. And that is what made this deal work for me. And so, I mean, I guess for me, it's even to this day, it's that I've got to look at my part, and if these steps are really working in my life, whether I'm married, divorced, single, right, that the promises tell me that I can learn how to love myself and love others. And if somebody else knew, you know, someone shows up in my life in the future, that's great. And if not, that's okay too. But the neatest thing is that my youngest daughter has a lot of self-esteem, and, you know, it's because she never had to choose between the people she loved. Never. And that's as a result of the 12 steps. It's as a result of learning how to have healthy relationships as a result of doing the work. And I am so grateful for that today. And, you know, our holidays, we all have meals together, and, you know, we meet in different places in the world together. And my youngest always brings friends. And, you know, they say things to her like, I wish my mom and dad did that. My mom and dad are divorced. My mom and dad are separated. And like, wow, I wish my mom and dad got along the way your mom and dad does. And, you know, so power of example, right? The proof is there. So for me, it's continue to learn, you know, how to maintain those healthy relationships. And, you know, and the most important, one of the people that taught me that at the beginning was my sponsor. You know, it's, you know, I had to learn how to get along with my sponsor before I knew how to get along with anybody else. And that took a while. Go do this. No. No, go do it. No. Well, then don't call me till you do it. Then call me. Fine. Right. So that's my experience. And I have so much respect for couples in recovery that work and do their own programs. And, you know, again, great proof that this does work. But sometimes things happen in life. You know, I mean, sometimes couples in recovery divorce, they separate. But it tells me in the literature that if I just keep doing my part, that hopefully I will experience, and, you know, my ex-husband will experience, and our family will experience the gift of conflict resolution and peace. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Michelle, and I'm an alcoholic. I'm really glad that the gentleman over there asked the question, because I'm very curious and interested to know how relationships work when you are in recovery. And I got a lot of really good information. I'm not in a relationship right now. I have had two long-term relationships in my life, and they have both been with men who had drinking problems. And I didn't understand why they went that way until I sat down and I talked to a counselor, and I said, why am I with these people who drink? I don't like them when they drink. I don't like myself when I drink. I was drinking at that time. And they said, it's because it's what you know. I was brought up in a family where there was a lot of drinking, Navy family. Everyone drank in the military. And I guess that's what I got to know. So for whatever reason, I was drawn to men that drank a lot in their relationships. And then, of course, those all turned ugly. I thought they had drinking problems. I was drinking then. I didn't think I had a problem with my alcohol. I thought it was their problem. So then I finally realized that I did have a problem with alcohol when I lost an amazing job. I'm from Canada. I worked for the Royal Canadian Mounted Police. And it was an excellent job, and I did lose it because of alcohol, and it was just really a really horrendous, disastrous thing to happen. And I sat down and I had to talk to my family, talk to my mom and dad, and say, I lost this fantastic job because I'm an alcoholic. And they didn't say, oh my God, you're an alcoholic. They just sat there and looked at me. And that was the reaction that I got from a lot of people that I talked to. I said, like, I'm an alcoholic. And I think a lot of people wanted to smack me on this head and say, well, I'm glad you finally realized that, because we've all known that for a long time. And my father said to me, when I told him that I was an alcoholic, now I'm going to start crying. He said to me, he said, oh, I knew that, dear. But he said, I did not want to say anything to you because my mother was an alcoholic, and I tried to discuss that with her, and it ruined their relationship. And he said, I just didn't want to ruin my relationship with you. So I'm 4 years sober now. I haven't had a relationship. It's taken me quite a while to learn to have a relationship with myself. And I have realized that no one else is going to like me unless I like myself. And I'm finally just learning how to like myself, which incorporates the happy, joyous, and free. I'm happy with myself. I'm joyous with my new life, with my new job, which I would like to point out. I am working for half as much money and working twice as hard. And I have to be nice to people that come in. I work in a physiotherapy clinic, and people come in, and they're in pain, and they're not happy, and I have to be nice to them. When I worked at the police station, there was a bulletproof glass in front of me, and if someone came in who was a jerk, I would say, excuse me, I'm going to go get a guy with a gun, okay? And you could be an asshole to him. But now I get people coming in, and they're in pain, and I have to be understanding, and I have to be compassionate. And it has taken me 3 years. I work at the clinic, and it has taken me 3 years to lose my cop brain, to lose my alcoholic brain, and to be compassionate and understanding with these people. And I have just felt in the last couple of months that I have just come out. Not in that way, but I feel like I am a brand new person, and I love myself, and I like the way I am. I feel I have a personality of yours. I'm loud, I'm boisterous, I'm all over the place, and maybe that scares people, maybe that offends people, but that's me. And you know, you love me or you leave me. Coming to this convention was I am breaking all my barriers in my life. When I was a drinker, for some reason I felt it was my responsibility to be the entertainment at any sort of function that we went to. So I would sit at home, have a couple of drinks before I went out, and I'm like, okay, I'm ready to do the Michelle show, let's go. And everyone would just sit there and take it all in. And then when I stopped drinking and I lost my job, I was like, where are my people? Where is my audience? What am I going to do now? There's no one here to watch the show. And I just fell right down into the trenches after that. And then it's just years and years of working on myself. And coming to this convention, as like I said, all the barriers are gone. I got on the plane by myself. I didn't have a drink before I got on the plane. I didn't wash down my Ativan with vodka like I usually do. I did that once on a flight to Puerto Vallarta when I was drinking, and apparently I snored so loud the whole plane heard me, and my sister wouldn't even wake me up. So I flew down here by myself, sitting in Seattle Airport, hanging on to my boarding pass and my backpack and all these things, and then somehow or other, I dropped my boarding pass and my passport. And I hadn't realized this. And I'm like, I'm going to go and walk around because I'm going to sit on a plane for a while. My ass is falling asleep. So I got up and I went to walk away. And this gentleman said, oh, Michelle, here's your passport. And I turned around and I was like, how do you know my name? I have your passport? I said, oh, my God, thank you very much. I said, I'm so glad I don't drink anymore. And he said, neither do I. And I went, oh. And he noticed my fingernails. On one of my fingernails, I have the Roman numeral for 4, which is how many years of sobriety I have. And then on the other nail, I have the AA symbol. So he saw that too. So he says, oh, you're a friend of Bill W.? And I thought, what a nice way to approach a person rather than going, are you an alcoholic? Oh, I don't know. So anyway, I ran into him the other day when I was photocopying. They gave me a little job just to kind of shut me up so I could meet some people. But and I'm in a hotel room by myself. I'm actually sleeping. I'm not afraid. I don't have all the furniture against the door like I usually would. And I'm just feeling so comfortable with everyone here. And you can just go and you can talk to people and you can say, hi, my name's this and I'm from there. And it's just, it's amazing. And I'm going to take all of this excitement and all of the love and just put it in my suitcase because I brought a big suitcase, too many clothes. And it's just, it's amazing. And I just overwhelmed at how friendly everyone is and how welcoming everyone is. And I came so close to not coming down to the trip because the last week before I came down here, I'm sure I lost weight. You know, you like to lose weight before you go on a trip so you can gain it when you're there. And then, you know, it's a push. You know, you're good. So for the last week that I was at home, I'm sure I was eating gravel with ginger in it to keep my stomach settled down. Vitamin C, so I didn't catch cold, because everyone catches a cold when you go on, because of the air on the plane is so terrible. And ginger ale. So I'm eating ginger ale and gravel with ginger ale and cough drops and all this other stuff. And my stomach is just like, ugh. So I'm sure I lost a few pounds before I came down here, which is good. So like I said, I was so contemplating canceling the trip. And I was talking to my mom and dad. And my dad said that he was so proud of me that I was coming down here by myself. And I just was so happy to hear those words from my dad, because I never will forget the feeling in my stomach when I had to tell my father that I had lost an amazing job with the police. And just hearing him say that he was proud of me, that I was going to do this, I thought, fuck it, I'm going, I don't care what happens. So thank you very much for everyone for being so loving and so welcoming. And it's just, this has just been an amazing weekend so far. And I know it's going to get better. And thank you very much for everyone else sharing their stories.
Hi, my name is Joe and I'm an alcoholic. Also Al-Anon. Thank you for the panel. I had 30 years of drinking and I understood each one of you because I've been in those situations. And what I want to say to you is, I didn't see it coming, what you did. You know, it's like I'm looking at my watch and said, oh, it's almost time to go. And then you start doing that and I'm out there too. You know? It's nice to see that. And you need somebody to bring it out on you, you know, and thank you. I heard somebody mention about Al-Anon. I'm also Al-Anon. I'm working on 24 years of Al-Anon, and I have 28 years working on 29 years of AA. I also have Naranon in me, too, so whoever knows about Naranon. But what I wanted to share is that 5 years sober, my wife asked me to come to Al-Anon, and I didn't know why, but she says, I need help with the kids. Well, she's doing good with the kids, so I don't know why she wants me to go to Al-Anon. But I like to keep her happy, so I said, I'll go. I didn't want to go. For 19 years, I was in Al-Anon, and one old-timer told me, he says, you know why you're not changing? And I go, why? He says, because you're around Al-Anon, you're not in Al-Anon. And I didn't understand what he meant. And then he asked me, do you have a sponsor? I said, no, I don't need one. I have a sponsor in AA. And after that meeting, I went and got a sponsor for Al-Anon. I did my 12 steps with them. They were way different than what I thought it was. And that's where Al-Anon turned me around to become a whole me. You know, AA got me sober. Al-Anon helped me make me happy. Where I'm a good husband today, and I'm a different person. I love myself. I love to act crazy. I used to act like that when I drank. For the first 5 years, they thought I was still drinking because I was acting like that. So today, I want to act like that, but, you know, I'm kind of holding back. Maybe later on I will. And I want to thank you for letting me share this.
Hi, Marcy, and I'm in Al-Anon. I really concentrate on the free word, because unless I'm free, it's difficult to be happy, although I thought I was happy. I thought I was a happy person for years, but I became a very angry person. And that anger came from thinking I was
I guess, a victim. I never thought I was a victim, but somebody pointed it out to me that I was acting like I was a victim. And I was so full of anger and not able to look at myself and the fact that I needed to work on myself in order to possibly be there for my sons, who are both, well, one's for sure alcoholic, one, the other one maybe, but unless I took care of myself, I couldn't even be there for them if they ever got sober. So letting go of that anger and that victimization is what set me free. It set me free from, and then working on myself set me free from most of the critical mind that I have. I learned quite well from my parents, who were also loving and engaged in parenting, but they were critical. And it's made it possible, I think, to still be married to my new husband of 3 years. And I'm thinking, if I hadn't been committed to Al-Anon and really learning and working on myself, I'd still be that angry person and probably be out the door and causing all sorts of hell in our marriage. So it really does make a difference to be working the program together. And so answering your question, if you're both working your programs, it makes a big difference. Keeps us together. Thanks.
My name is Jim. I'm an alcoholic and a grateful member of Al-Anon. I've worked the steps in both programs. About the relationship piece, I met my wife in recovery, and a couple years into our marriage, I was working with an Al-Anon sponsor, and I had a case of the she's, and, you know, she this and she that. And he said, Jim, and I was boasting that I had a few more years than her, and she would eventually catch up. And he said, Jim, water seeks its own level. And I didn't quite understand immediately what he meant, but he says, you know, you picked her, and you attracted her, and you've got your own work to do. And then a few years later, I was working with another sponsor, again in Al-Anon, and he said, Jim, your marriage is none of your business. And my wife and I each work our own programs. We don't work a program together. We work our programs together. And that works because I trust her program and I trust my program, and her program is none of my business. Whether she's going to a meeting is none of my business. Whether she's working with her sponsor, I mean, there's a lot of times where I think she should probably, you know, but because that's my default. Is my Al-Anon default is there's something wrong with you, and that's why I need that part. But anyway, that's my experience with the relationship. It's a work in progress, and we kind of renew our deal every year. You know, we're in for another year. Yep. Okay. All right. We'll do it.
Hi. Good morning. My name is Jean. I'm an alcoholic. First off, what a great conference, what a great panel, and I think, Lyle, that was my question in the Ask It Basket all those years ago. So if I owe you an amends, let me know. I've been known to stuff those great baskets. We do those in Washington because you can ask a ton of questions anonymously to the panel, and I was at one conference, and I think I had all my sponsees with them, and it was a sponsorship panel, and I put in a few questions, but every time they would pull something out, like, what do you do with a sponsee who doesn't call every day or anything? All of my girls in the front will turn around and look, and, you know, it's like, no, I didn't put that in there, but it's a great way to ask questions. But what I wanted to say, James, thank you very much for breaking each one of those down, each word, happy, joyous, and free. I always, when I first got here, I thought happy, joyous, and free. It's like, oh, enough already. All you bright, shiny people, I just can't deal with you. This is just too much, and the hugging and the laughter. No, just, you know, I'm here to stay sober. I don't want any of this stuff. I am not a joiner. And happy and joyous, that was, I'm fine. And the free part is I'm not in jail anymore, so it must be okay. But the way that you broke it down is, you know, happy is watching the light come on in somebody else's eyes, of being of service, and just having a little part of, you know, watching a mom get her daughter back, and you know, that you can't pay for that kind of stuff. And the joy is that connection I have with God, knowing that I'm doing His will, and that this is, that I have a purpose, I have a path. And the free still is, you know, I'm not in jail, but I was looking, I've got this notebook that a woman gave me at the international conference last year. And I pulled it out because I love going to conferences and just taking little notes. And I started flipping through here, and it's like, this is freedom. This is like a passport. I can go anywhere in the world and just meet up with, you know, all of, I don't know any of you, but I know all of you, and what a freedom that is. So thank you very much. I'm glad to be here.
My name is Andy. I'm an alcoholic. I've been in the program just under 2 years now. I've been using pretty much anything I get my hands on for 50 years. And it just occurred to me that my wife and I separated. She left the relationship about, it's coming up on a year now. And it's been just kind of falling off a mountain, top of a mountain, and crashing into various levels of rock. You know, bang, bang, bang. And it just occurred to me that there's like this hole, and people come along. It's like a carousel, and they're like pegs. And you try and put these people in this hole and see if it works somehow, and it never does. And we've been married 22 years, and I really, it was like the kind of the core of my life. And it just occurred to me that this attempt to fill this hole is an addiction. It's like drugs, it's like alcohol. And if that's your nature, to find something external to plug this this volcano of pain, doesn't work. And I do a lot of meditation. I'm into Buddhism, and so I have, along with this fellowship, I have the precepts in Buddhism about non-intoxication. So I really feel, I wouldn't say that I feel safe, but I have a kind of a double support system. But I think, and I wasn't going to come here because it was like, there is that sense of isolation. But I managed to drag myself to the conference, and I'm really happy that I came, because it also occurs to me that here there's no me and them, there's just us. And I'm really grateful for that. I can feel that, you know, whatever that hole is, this is really the opportunity to fill it with light, because this place is just, you know, you have to wear sunglasses when you come in here, because the spirit is just so profound. So I'm really grateful to be here. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Carlos, and I am an alcoholic. I want to thank you for coming here as speakers. That's very nice. Thank you for being here and bringing the message. You know, it's very important. You know, relationships, when I meet my wife, she was drunk. And she's here with me today. I had 2 years when I was bar hopping still, you know, looking for Mrs. Goodbar or whatever. And so I met her over there, and she was totally drunk. And, you know, I had a sponsor, and I think he's still alive. His name is Bill Tupac in Roseville, California. And I wanted to quit this relationship, And having a sponsor and being honest with your sponsor is extremely important. Because he said, my sponsor said, Carlos, every relationship that you have, at a certain time you quit those relationships. So don't you think it's time for you just to hang around and see what happened? And I stayed there. It's been 25 years ago. No, you know, it's, and it is one of the best relationships I ever had. And not because of her and me, it's because also the relationship that I had with myself. Because a guy in Sacramento told me one time, his name is David Mack. He says, Carlos, do you have a relationship? Because he's seen me like a butterfly running around. You know, I have my ponytail, not, you know, and driving a Mercedes to park over there, and women and all the stuff. Angel flights, you know, like Miami Vice, you know, stuff like that. And they, Mac, looked at me and says, Carlos, do you have a relationship? Oh, yeah, look at it. I have all kinds of relationships. No. Do you have a relationship with yourself? And that kind of hit me. So my sponsor said, why don't you start working on yourself and see how this relationship works? It's not a secret to keep a relationship. It's not a secret. You know, it's not a big deal if you're honest with yourself and your wife. You know, if you don't cheat with your wife and you're honest, how can you lose a relationship? We have a relationship, and I quit doing that. You know, I was a womanizer. I quit. I don't know how that happened. I think maybe working the steps, huh? You know, I think working the steps kind of give you self-esteem, because my sponsor said, I have a lot of self-esteem. How can you have self-esteem and self-respect when you're fucking around all over the place? Excuse my language. And so it changed without knowing. I don't know when that change happened. I have no idea how that happened. But her love to me got into my heart. And one time I woke up and I was driving from Brazil home. We were living together for a year, and it dawned on me that I truly love these women. And I stopped. Back then, there were no cellulars. I stopped, and I pick up the phone, and I call her. I said, Sandra, I love you. And that was it. We've been through storms. We've been through hardships. We went through a lot. We migrated two families together, two boys. A girl and a boy, we migrated them together. With child, you know, teenage, you know, we went through hell, but her and I, we stuck together. And today we have a wonderful kids. They have a wonderful little relationship because of the program. I don't walk in water yet, but the happiness is I find that in the stuff that I do. You know, I had the best job in the world. Working for the state of California as a network engineer, I was miserable. Today, I don't have much as I have, or maybe more, but I am happy in what I do. You know, happiness doesn't exist. It's something that I create. Maybe for, you know, happiness exists long time ago when I go buy $20 of weed or $20 of whiskey. I can buy those happiness. Today is a happiness that I have to create. It doesn't exist. It doesn't for me. It doesn't exist unless I create it. That joy is such a wonderful thing for me. It's when I know there is a God. And that I'm not alone. It's a joy simply knowing that there is a power greater than yourself. And freedom is something that freedom from bondage, freedom from my ego, that I get into the present moment. I have places where I live that I have places in my head that I find that freedom. I have places, physically I have places that I go and find freedom. I have freedom and parts in my mind. I find those freedoms. And when I'm in trouble, I have to get into the present. There's times I don't need to be in the present because where I am brings me into the present. But there is time right here that I have to create that presence, but there's places that I don't have to create those presence. They're there for me. You know, and to detach, I am very rich. Very rich. But to detach from that and to live a life with my wife, my parents. My parents is getting younger every day. I see them, they hardly walk. They hold each other. And I tell my wife, it's time for me to be there for my parents. And I love my parents as I love my kids when they were kids. So it's a love that we get here, you know? It's a love that we get here. And I love that. And my ego didn't want me to speak. Because I'm very well aware. Today, I don't want to have all this. I just want to get to know me. You know? My ego, it is my biggest, biggest challenge every day. There is no evil for me. I can honestly tell you, there is no evil for me today. It's my ego that the one that I have to fight. I don't believe in these other black powers and that. I believe in my ego. There is the one that I have to bring him down every day. And I don't know what the hell I'm saying, but thank you so much.
This has been awesome. I'd like to thank the panel for bringing us all here and for starting this conversation. Thank you so much. I would like to make a couple announcements before we leave. This afternoon at 1 p.m. is the Al-Anon speaker meeting where Stacy B. will dance again. No, just kidding. Where Stacy B. from Seattle, Washington will share her story with us. This is a family disease that we all live with, both alcoholics and Al-Anons. The message is for everyone, and I look forward to seeing you there. A little housekeeping announcement, if you haven't done so already, please be sure to bring your passport and your tourist card to the near the registration desk for the passport raffle. They need to make a little copy of it. And even if you're not interested in the raffle, if you could do it, it helps us out. We get some tax reimbursement. So we appreciate that. And at this time, will everyone who cares to stand, hold hands, and we'll say the Serenity Prayer. Thank you.